Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
We are back. You're listening to America This Week. Father Matt Malone is traveling in the Holy Land with Father James Martin. And as we said earlier, you can follow their trip live at journeys.americamagazine.org. But meanwhile, I'm here joined by Carrie Weber and our poetry editor, Brother Joe Hoover.
You can call me bro.
I'll call him bro.
Please. Love it.
Talking about poetry and the role of the Catholic writer. Joe, maybe you can, you know, elaborate on that question that Carrie just asked in terms of the role of the Catholic writer. You went to this special conference on it. You know, sometimes we get a little stuck in our world looking back at kind of the classic Catholic writers who have moved so many of us, you know, people like Gerard Manley Hopkins, for example. But how do we find that next generation of writers who are going to, you know, speak to, you know, the next generation of Catholics?
Yeah, that's another great question. I would say there's two basic things. Increase our knowledge and devotion and, you know, worship and, you know, make the Catholic faith more attractive. Not that you sell out its basic principles, but, you know, bringing more people into the fold, encouraging more, you know, people to, you know, take this faith seriously, beginning with myself. And the second is to teach people to be great writers. We need great writers, period, in who can articulate human experience, you know. There's no shortcut to this kind of stuff, in my experience. If I read a poem that's very heartfelt and about someone's prayer experience and their vision of God or their take on faith, that's fantastic, and it's a great avenue for spiritual growth. But it might not be something that we'd publish as a work of art or as a, you know, some beauty that you know, creates a larger vision of who God is and what the world is and so on and so forth. So for poets who submit to America, get a lot of people who are taking their writing seriously and want to articulate their faith. But I would encourage them, read the best writers and then write like them. And that's what any writer, myself included, has to do. There's a lot of Catholic writers out there. There's a ton of Catholic writers out there who are submitting to America and everywhere else. But, you know, we all need to grow in our technique, the craft. I think that's just a basic, huge thing.
Well, one point I think is worth emphasizing is that as you get a lot of poetry about God and people search for God, but that's not all you're looking for. You're looking for people who are talking about a human experience. Maybe the word God is never mentioned, but it's the art itself. So we're looking for people to be writing about a variety of human experiences.
Yeah, I mean, let me put it bluntly. Right now, I'm looking for anything that's fantastic, anything that does tell the truth of human experience. Father Malone, I knew him before he was a father, so I call him Matt Malone, but Father Malone would say we can publish anything as long as it doesn't, you know, go against Catholic faith and morals. And right now, I think at America, we want to just publish fantastic writing, at least in the poetry world, and kind of set the bar higher for those people who are more specifically Catholic, who want to submit our poetry and say, this is how we should be, you know. If you want to get published in America or whatever, write like this poet who's writing about cows or something. But again, I encourage people to really, or I encourage, you know, people who are really strong at their craft to submit, and people who need to develop, to really, you know, take the time to develop the craft, you know?
I do, yeah. I think what you mentioned about that channeling of that human experience is something that it sort of appears in a lot of poems that have really touched me and that I've really enjoyed in my life, is that sense of reading a poem and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, Joyce Carol Oates was with me at that moment, in a sense. You know, it's almost like channeling that. One of my favorite poems is this poem called Night Driving by Joyce Carol Oates. And it's basically about driving south on I-95 through Jersey, which is probably like the least poetic experience you can imagine.
Yeah.
But she has lines like where she describes the light on all sides, like teeth winking, and that smell like baking bread gone wrong, and you want to die. It's so beautiful. And I just am channeled back to these times in high school when I drove from Massachusetts to New Jersey with my friends to go see Bruce Springsteen in concert, and we thought like this was the most wildly romantic kind of American experience of a road trip to see Bruce Springsteen. And that's not what Joyce Carol Oates is writing about here. But it is, in some sense. And that's sort of the beauty of poetry, is that she looks at into my experience through her world, and I can see a little bit into hers through that. I wonder, Joe, if there's any poems that have really struck you and have spoken to your own experience in your life.
Yes.
there please are. Please name all of them.
Do I have to talk about them? Okay. So, well, let me just name a couple just that we've gotten into America. We get a lot of poems from prisoners, actually, people mm-hmm. who are in, you know, federal or state or county prisons. And there's one that we published by a guy named Alan Rice, who is a Marine Corps vet. And it's, when I published it, when I looked at it, I was like, this is so simple, but it's so kind of like shocking, or it gets at these deeper questions. It's a very short poem. So it's called Autumn. And I kind of love it. It's called, it's called Autumn. Autumn is the time of year when God's invisible hand paints the leaves in broad strokes of color, then plucks them off one by one. So what you've got, and I don't want to analyze it or go deep into it, but I guess I'll just say it gets at a question of how God operates in the world doing these things that are both life-giving and yet death-dealing.
Right, right. That, I mean, and
so, and I just think that gets at something more than any as much as any theology book could.
Certainly. Are there other poems, sort of from our some of those great Catholic writers that we've mentioned, or contemporary writers that might be more well known that really have struck you?
Well, Sherman Alexie is a Coeur d'Alene, Spokane, Coeur d'Alene, Native American, and he grew up Catholic, and I believe he went to a Jesuit school, but his poems are hilarious, and they not necessarily have anything to do with spirituality and so forth, but I worked on a reservation for a few years at Red Cloud Indian School, and he gets at the experiences, some of the experiences that that I experienced. So here's a very funny one. It's called Happy Holidays. And he's irreverent, so whatever. Indians love fireworks. We make millions selling illegal ones to white folks. Well, not millions for each of us, but you know what I mean. A working definition of tolerance. When Indians make money from white folks celebrating their independence. Okay, so Sherman Alexie, monosonnet for colonialism interrupted. Yes, colonialism created George Custer and Andrew Jackson, who were genocidal maniacs. But without American colonialism, we would not have action-adventure movies like Die Hard or The Consolations and Desolations of Emily Dickinson. In fact, at one point, I considered writing an action-adventure movie about Emily Dickinson.
In there, you've got The Consolations and The Desolations, which is a very Ignatian idea, even, which is kind of fascinating.
That is. You know, being a Jesuit, I didn't even think about that, you know? I mean, not because I'm a Jesuit. It's surprising that being a Jesuit, I didn't think about that. There's another woman named Mary Shibist, and I hope I'm not pronouncing that wrong. It's S-Z-Y-B-I-S-T. And she had a book of poetry called Incarnadine, which last year won the National Book Award. And I loved it. It's all, many of the poems are about the Annunciation, but not all of them are. And so she's got this poem, The Troubadours, etc. At what point is something gone completely? The last of the sunlight is disappearing, even as it swells. Just for this evening, won't you put me before you until I'm far enough away you can believe in me. Then try to come closer, my wonderful and less than. And actually reading that one reminded me of this other poem. And let me just say that reading poetry can sound super pretentious. Let's just acknowledge that and get on with our lives. So, but there's one I remember from, I believe it's the New Yorker, Wisła Szymborska. Again, another name I'm probably butchering. But there's one line in there I've always remembered. She's talking about her husband. It says, I am too close for you to notice me. I am too close for you to notice me. And that gets into the whole dynamic, as it were, of a relationship in about 9 words. And I think that's awesome.
Right. And in some ways, that's the power of poetry, is that it's so sparse in some ways. It's so whittled down. Every word has to mean something. Every word has to carry a real weight. Every word really matters. I wonder, you mentioned sort of your Jesuit identity. I wonder if you could talk a bit about how your identity as a Jesuit influences how you read poetry, and then maybe how your love of poetry influences your own Jesuit and Ignatian spirituality.
Let me speak about the first question a little more. We have this sense, the Jesuits and, you know, Catholics in general, that everything can be used to glorify God. The world, all of creation can be used and is meant to glorify God. And we can use it in that sense, or we can use it in a way that, you know, conceals God. And so I think for me, one of the gifts of being a Jesuit, I've been a Jesuit for 13 years, and I love the society. I'm very honored to be a Jesuit, etc. But is that we can find beauty and truth and grace in ways outside of the typical everyday sort of places that we would think to find them. And you can find beauty and truth and grace in the walls of a church and in scripture and in the crucifix and in Good Friday and so forth, and in poetry that is specifically religious, like Gerard Manley Hopkins, for instance. But you can also find, I think, anything that speaks to truth in an honest and articulate way tells us something of a higher power that can get at something of the divine. And so my job is in some ways to just put it out there, publish things that just get at truth, and people will bring themselves to it. People will make connections of their faith or their life or going to Bruce Springsteen concert, whatever that is, to that poetry. It's in a way respecting people by not putting it in their laps and saying, this is exactly what's going on and this is what you should believe. People will do that work themselves.
Now, you've got a couple more books of poetry there. Before we, you know, move to our next segment, I want to give you a chance to read any more of some of your favorite selections.
Why, sure, Tim. I'd be glad to. But let me just say, first of all, we have on our poetry world in America a Tumblr site, americaliterary.tumblr, and a Twitter feed, americaliterarytwitter.com. And so that's where we publish all the poems that we do publish in the magazine and put nice pictures around them and so forth and have Poets of the Week and, you know, try to make this really contemporary and attractive to the youth out there. So, but, you know, some of my favorite poets, I was thinking about this beforehand, who's the prophet, Isaiah, maybe you've heard of him. You know, Isaiah 9, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Isaiah 39, comfort, give comfort to my people, says your God. I love that line, comfort, give comfort to my people, says your God. I could read that and just get very emotional, let me put it like that. The Gospel of John, the light shines in the darkness and the darkness has not overcome it. One of my favorite passages, come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, because I am meek and humble of heart. For my yoke is easy and my burden light. It's about 4 lines that articulate the entire gospel in a way. And to me, that's some of the most beautiful writing ever created. And it's those things that can kind of, you can take in your pocket and you can take in your heart and not to get too sentimental here, but you can those things stay in the brain. They cut into us and they stay with us forever. And they're the kind of things you feed off of. There's also, if we have time, Christian Wiman is a poet who I think the world of. He's got a new poetry book that I reviewed in our latest edition.
This is one of our poetry roundup you do every year.
Poetry Roundup, yeah. Exactly, called Once in the West. And he talks about, he talks about a lot of things. One of them is about a preacher who's giving this, the preacher addresses the seminarians, and he says, I tell you, some Sundays, even the children's sermon, maybe especially this, sharks your gut like a bite of some beer-guzzling goat, either drunkenly or mistakenly decides to sample. And at the end he says, the truth is our only savior is failure.
Well, there's a lot going on in that last line.
There's a lot going on in that last line. There's a very powerful poet called a poem named Patricia Lockwood, and she has a really devastating poem here. And again, this is one of those poems that just speaks to truth. And again, I just think any poem that speaks to truth can move the heart. And it's called Rape Joke. It's a little intense, but the rape joke is that you went home like nothing happened and laughed about it the next day and the day after that. The rape joke is that he was your father's high school student. Your father taught world religions. The last line of the poem, the rape joke is that the next day he gave you Pet Sounds, which is an album by the Beach Boys, excuse me. No, really, Pet Sounds. He said he was sorry, and then he gave you Pet Sounds. She doesn't explain what happened. She doesn't try to articulate the whole experience. She just talks around it and gives you the sense of what happened. And in that, I think we draw our own conclusions and we can see the horror of what happened to this young woman. And it becomes more powerful.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And that's the power of poetry, is that it doesn't always have to sort of be right on the nose, and it doesn't describe everything in detail. It describes the experience in a way that we can all maybe relate to in some way, and makes it universal in a really powerful way.
I'd like to read, we have time, I'd like to read one more quick poem.
All right, is it quick?
So it's called The Scary Night Owl, and it's on our Tumblr
seat.
It's by a little child. She was 3 years old when she wrote this.
All right.
The Scary Night Owl, this is the greatest poem ever written. The Scary Night Owl flew to the moon to get cheese for its pizza. It left the moon a banana.
And there you have it, the world's greatest poem read today for the first time live by Brother Joe Hoover here on America This Week.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.